the squirrel had come into the unit and chased another roommate around, and then Scott put up, or his handy person, I don't know, put up a mesh screen, but hadn't like done the plastering over it. So they put a painting over it.
You know, the Scooby-Doo episodes where the eyeballs and the painting are moving? Those eyeballs were a squirrel. At one point, a light fell on your head. You pulled the cord.
Bolt chain, yep.
The light fell on your head and you had to get stitches in your head.
Staples. We were trying to get heat in the apartment. Scott was just evasive and sort of saying things that weren't turning into action. It was really unclear if we would get any heat. Other tenant moved out because their toilet bowl froze solid.
So you have a big gaping hole in the side of the house. Is that accurate?
There were tarps.
You have such low standards for your housing. I mean, there were tarps.
One other roommate and I were both at home, and there was pounding on both the front and the back doors, and neither of us felt comfortable going and answering really loud pounding. Another unit did, and then came and talked to us and let us know that it was somebody serving papers for a foreclosure notice. Scott's strengths were not highlighted in his role as a landlord with that kind of responsibility over people's well-being, over our safety, our comfort, you know, our sense of home. And
you're being too kind. You use the phrase his strengths were not highlighted to wrap this up. His strengths were not highlighted. You've described some horrible conditions that you lived through, so it's very kind of you to say his strengths were not highlighted.
I am concerned that the role of city council member is outside of what is good for either the city of Minneapolis or honestly for Scott himself.
We're rolling. We are rolling.
This is a real thing. Real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this.
Today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now, 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 right now.
So this is an unusual topic for me, but I've never done like this style of episode, so I want to be smooth about it.
Yeah. What style is this?
Talking to people about a bad experience they had. It's usually candidates.
You don't usually do the trauma thing?
No. So if I'm insensitive at any point.
If you make me cry by bringing up things that are hard in my life.
I edit the episode so I can edit those parts out. Here we are on the Wedge Live podcast for a different style of episode. We're here in Kenwood Park. I'm joined by my friend, Julia Curran, to talk about her experiences as a tenant with her landlord of 12 years ago now. Is that when it was?
That's when it ended, yeah.
Scott Graham, who was running for city council in Ward 7. And full disclosure, I'm already not a fan of Scott Graham. Julia's had bad experiences with Scott Graham as a tenant, and so is probably not a fan of Scott Graham. And so, full disclosure, know where we're coming from. But also, Julia's told me these stories over the years as a friend. I can vouch for that. And also, I have reviewed old emails between you and Scott Graham and some of your housemates. And so I feel confident that everything that's about to be said in this episode is true.
Yes. I want to clarify that I am not a fan of Scott Graham as a person in a position of power over me. I got along fine with him in casual conversations, and we had enough overlapping interests that I, you know, that was a totally fine. Those were interactions that I appreciated as an extrovert and somebody who was, you know, working from home occasionally, but it was a lot of the interaction specifically around his role of responsibility and the power dynamic, right, that where I did not appreciate his behavior.
He had a position of power over you as a landlord. Your housing depended on him.
Very much.
So how long were you a tenant of Scott Graham's?
Over 4 years.
Okay. And that ended in 2011?
Yes.
So during the election, it's come out that he's had like 200 some housing violations, and he put out a statement explaining them, and the explanation was, well, I was a property manager for other owners, and I was responsible. I was going in to fix the problems, but this was a house that he owned, right?
I believe he owned it. We sent rent, each of the units sent rent to a different entity. Right. One was his wife, one was another name, Walter Investments, and then the third was to him. I honestly do not recall if I checked it, if it was both him and his wife or just him. So
I looked at the mortgage, the foreclosure document
that
you sent me.
I haven't looked back at that.
And it was his wife and him listed on the foreclosure document.
Yeah.
So he did own the house.
Yeah.
So what kind of housing was it? This was a house with multiple units?
A triplex.
On Colfax Avenue in the Wedge?
Yes.
And you lived with roommates, housemates?
Yes. I had two roommates. I moved in to replace somebody who was moving in with her girlfriend. And it was one of, you know, I found it on Craigslist, looking for some place on bus lines.
And this is over 4 years. Mm-hmm. And what kinds of problems did you have living there over the years?
The first big problem that I found out about was that there was a consistent issue with the heat. And previous winters, people had to sort of hunker down in the rooms with space heaters. So when I was moving in, we were looking at, I hadn't experienced a winter yet, but the other two roommates were wanting to finally get that addressed. And so that was sort of the first thing to come up. There were a couple of other things that I became aware of, but when one of the roommate who was leaving was picking up a painting, it turned out it had been covering a hole in the wall that a squirrel had chewed through. So,
it's a house of horrors.
Typical of Scott, it was not fully repaired. The squirrel had come into the unit and chased another roommate around, and then Scott put up, or his handy person, I don't know, put up a mesh screen, but hadn't done the plastering over it. So they put a painting over it.
It's like the, you know, Scooby-Doo episodes where the eyeballs and the painting are moving. Those eyeballs were a squirrel.
A squirrel actually did, after the one chewed through, another one came up to look through the hole in the wall and freaked a roommate out.
Okay.
I was not privy to seeing the squirrels in that location.
I'm sorry for laughing at your trauma.
I was not the one hiding from the squirrels. I did not see them. They were just in my ceiling all the time.
So I read through the emails, and some of the messages are from your housemates. Some of them are from you. Some of them are from Scott Graham. And it sounds like there's just a ton of problems going on with this house, and things aren't getting fixed in a timely manner. And they're not getting fixed properly in a way that makes them stay fixed.
Yeah, it was also really unclear. We'd hear things were going to get fixed, and then they wouldn't get fixed, and was not clear communication.
How did you let Graham know about the problems? Is this mostly by email? Did you see him when he came by? Did you call him? How did you communicate the problems to him?
For me, it was probably when he came by and via email most, but I had four roommates over that time period, and the roommates that I moved in with first, I know, sometimes used the phone as well.
And so did you have a sense of how many properties he owned or was managing at the time? Is this like a guy with a big portfolio and you're just like one of many properties he's managing, or are you just his one side business that he's coming over and handling?
I'm not entirely sure. The first year I was there, I believe it was the first year, he was actually not living in Minneapolis, which seemed to be an issue because there wasn't a clear line of how to get things addressed. He was, I think, in New York for the year. And at some point he did reference another property. I think he was gonna do something with that one so that he could get the money to pay on the foreclosure. But I wasn't sure anything about him as a landlord, aside from he seemed to have a lot of different cars that he'd show up in.
Oh, we got a lot of cars.
I mean, I don't know if they were his, but he very often, you know, would have a different...
He's a real estate agent. You have to impress with the car you drive,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm going to go through a series of things that stood out to me that were problems with your residence. At one point, a light fell on your head. You pulled the cord.
Chain, yep.
The light fell on your head, and you had to get stitches in your head.
Staples. Yeah, it was a heavy glass globe.
This is a problem you were aware of previously, or just kind of, did you?
I was aware of it when something broke on my head.
That's the first time you're aware of the problem with this light. Did you contact Scott after that happened, before it happened?
I did not. I mean, I didn't know it was loose. I didn't know it hadn't been properly installed until it fell on my head. And I was really glad I wasn't looking up because it was really heavy. I did end up contacting him after that just because it seemed to be, you know, I didn't know who did the installation, but it was clearly poorly installed. It wasn't something that we were doing. And so I did let him know.
Was he responsive in fixing that?
Honestly, I don't remember what happened, like if he replaced it or what. I did suggest maybe a plastic one since CFLs don't get as hot. And I had to push him to get him to respond because I did ask him to pay for my copays.
Right.
So.
Did he pay for your copays?
Yeah.
He asked in one email about, like, let me know if there are any more leaks. It seemed like leaks were an issue in the house. Can you describe those problems?
There were definitely ice dams that were an occurrence. I'm trying to think of, I think that was the predominant, well, I'm assuming it was ice dams, but I'm not sure because towards the end we had so many carpenter ants, and when we were reading up on them at first, we were like, we were putting food away. We were trying to figure out why we still had them, why there were, I killed seven queens in my bedroom in one evening. So it felt like the little, you know, the fairy tale about the tailor who kills seven flies. And as I was reading more about it, it was like, it's not about anything we're doing. There's something, you know, it's something that's not good about the structure of the house, or there's something that needs addressing. And so I don't know if there was additional water damage happening elsewhere, or if it was more serious. I just kind of assumed it was ice dams because, you know, some of it was happening in the winter.
So when you communicated about the leaks, did he fix the leaks?
Not that I'm recalling.
Just kind of let them go.
It didn't. He didn't seem, he seemed less concerned than I was for the integrity of the structure.
Was it kind of a let me know if the leaks get worse kind of thing, but
no,
they're fine for now?
I remember having the sense of like, you're kind of bothering me. I think I texted him about it initially and then also, you know, sent an email, but it was just one of those where it was like I'd, you know, ice dams happen. It's in Minnesota, and I had lived in a house where we had them, and we were trying to deal with them immediately. And it was like a holiday, and you know, somebody out on the roof trying to out the window a little doing things. So to me, I thought it was a thing that you don't want happening, and you kind of address urgently. But it didn't seem to be something that was bothering him.
Dead animals.
Yeah.
These squirrels, you think? There's a dead animal smell that I read about in the emails.
Yes, that was the closet that shared a wall with where the squirrel had chewed through. So that was what we suspected, but we never found out. When we raised the issue with Scott, he brought over an ozone machine, which is not, you know, those are an ozone generator, and they're pretty dangerous. They're not really supposed to be used outside of like industrial spaces because of the dangers of ozone for humans. So we never used it and just did not use that closet.
The missing wall. So this is something that Naomi Kritzer wrote about in her. So it was in a Twitter thread you did years ago. She wrote about it in her Ward 7 candidate write-up and came to the conclusion Scott Graham is a nightmare. So tell me, how did the missing wall come about?
When we were trying to get heat in the apartment, Scott was just evasive and sort of saying things that weren't turning into action. It was really unclear if we would get any heat. We had some, the other roommates who'd been there longer had suggestions of like, maybe if we can't get the heat replaced, we could do some sort of, you know, the landlord covers part of the electric so that we can run the space heaters. And we'd done the things like putting the plastic, this is a long answer, but plastic over windows, all of that. So none of that was, Scott was not responsive. And we ended up trying to figure out what else we could do, talked to the city, found out that one option to really put pressure on, possibly since we weren't getting a response in any other way, was to look into putting rent into escrow or starting an inspection process. So that was by far not our first choice. You know, it had been months and an ongoing issue for years. One other tenant moved out because their toilet bowl froze solid. So we did end up getting the city involved, and the city did an inspection, which revealed, you know, additional additional violations, including the three-season porch on the front, which led to the wall coming off.
So the thing you didn't even complain about, the city shows up to inspect the thing you were complaining about, finds more problems, and that turns into a big repair job for...
I mean, it was... Repair would be really an understatement. It was a demolition job. There was... I came home one evening, and there was, like, a dumpster sitting on the bush in the front. And I kind of wish I had pictures, because it was just, like, at the weirdest angle. People... there was the demolition of the porch, and...
So you have a big gaping hole in the side of the house. Is that accurate?
There were tarps.
You have such low standards for your housing. There were tarps.
We grew up, we moved around a lot. We lived in a tent for 3 months in Bemidji. You know, the family house was in Ward 7, but there were other places we lived that...
You're used to roughing it.
You know, it's... Yes and no. I think the unpredictability was what was hard. If we knew how long the tarps would be up, if there were clear, like, if I knew that there'd be a house shaking and I'd look out the window and there'd be, you know, what looked like teen boys in a Jeep with a chain attached to the old one pulling it down, a lot of it was like the lack of transparency.
That was the demolition process? Teen boys in a Jeep?
I did not ask them their ages. That was just my read on it when I was looking out the window and trying to figure out why the house was shaking.
That's how they'll play it in the Scott Graham movie, is teen boys in a Jeep pulling the wall off the house that he owns.
I mean, they looked like they might have been enjoying it.
How long did the gaping hole covered by tarps in your home go on for? How long did you have this hole exposed to the elements?
Again, tarp, perfect text from elements. That's what it's for. It started in April. We were not given, we didn't know what was even being built, honestly. Like, at some point I asked one of the people who was overdoing some of the work if he knew what Scott was planning, because we weren't privy to that information. The porch finally went up in early September, and then there was still walls, doors, I think things were finishing up by November, and then the doors continued to blow open in the winter.
I'm interpreting from some of the emails I've read that you sent me that there's, like, maybe towards the end there's this tone of Scott is retaliating against us because we're, I think you used the phrase, squeaky wheel. We've caused him problems by complaining about the issues with this house. Now he's mad at us. Was that dynamic something you were conscious of the time you rented with them?
The point, I don't think, I wasn't when I started, to be clear. And I was also a sublease initially. I became the senior member in that unit and tried to get a lease from Scott, but he would say it was in the mail. I never received anything.
Never had a lease the whole time you were there?
I had a sublease from the person who I moved in with initially, and then when I became the primary person, I was supposed to have a lease with Scott, which he said he would get to me and never got to me. And then in April, was saying that he'd had some sort of computer failure and lost all of his leases, which at the time I was like, oh, it made sense based on, you know, he just did not seem cut out for this level of responsibility.
Yeah, I read that. He's like asking your housemates for leases because his hard drive failed. And you say you never got a lease.
And I had eventually given up asking. I asked him in person. The other roommate who I was taking over from was asking. He did verify via email that I was aware that I would be responsible for the entirety of the rent as the primary person on it. But I never did receive that. He never did a walkthrough with me when I moved in or with the other people when they moved in. And that was something that, you know, we thought should happen, but there were often more requests than it was feasible to ask about. And given the delay in responding to them, things just, you know, you'd stop asking about things.
Also in the emails that I read at the end, it seems like there's a foreclosure. I've seen the document. How did you learn about this? Is this what forced you out of the house that it got foreclosed on? Was he not paying his mortgage? That's how foreclosure works, right? You're not paying your mortgage.
That's my understanding of foreclosure. We found out one other roommate and I were both at home, and there was pounding on both the front and the back doors, and neither of us felt comfortable going and answering really loud pounding. Eventually, one of the other people in another unit did, and then came and talked to us and let us know that it was somebody serving papers for a foreclosure notice, where I learned that one of the roommates who had moved out had paid more to him in rent than he had paid on the mortgage. So I don't know what all was going on with that, but he assured us first that it wasn't going to be an issue. He was going to just pay it up. I think that happened in May, but in mid-June, I believe, he told us that he wanted us out by end of July. And there was a lot of uncertainty around all of this because there were different messages being given to the people in different units, but it turned out he only wanted our unit gone. He said that he thought that he might have people moving in, you know, whoever bought it might want to live on that floor. And this was after telling us he was planning on paying for it. So it was, the story just kept changing. And then after we moved out, he was looking for paint to finally, to cover up some stuff. And I believe it was the water damage, but I would want to just double check that. But because he was showing the unit for other people to rent. Mm-hmm. So the story of why we were being asked to move to change.
Have I skipped through anything that was like wrong with your housing that he wasn't addressing or was taking a long time to address? Have I skipped over any of those big issues before I get to like the end of your...
I mean, I wasn't the only person who needed medical attention. Another roommate needed stitches from something that was poorly installed. A stair broke under my feet in the back where there was a railing. The stairs were deteriorating and we'd raised that concern, hadn't had it addressed. At one point, somebody had just moved into another unit and was turning on the oven to heat up a pizza, and it set off the huge alarm, you know, the one that's apartment buildings have that's very flashy lights, and it was really hard getting a hold of him to find out how to shut it off. And then his suggestion to the person was that they unplug the fire alarm.
It seems right. It seems right to me. I've never been a landlord, but that's how I'd do it.
I would have felt a lot more comfortable if it had not been a structure that already...
Right, this house seems like a death trap, and he's like, turn off the fire alarm.
I honestly did have in my mind sometimes, with storms moving through, it was...
Have your escape route planned.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
So foreclosure comes, and you're all leaving. Anything about like the process of him evicting you from this house that stands out to you?
Altogether, the fact that he said he didn't get me a lease. The lease, he said his computer failed sometime in April. It kind of felt like it was setting it up to make sure that we didn't have, enough information to kind of push back against being pushed out. And he did, it was not much time that he was giving us. We were asking about additional time. He sort of went back and forth, but that was kind of how things went with him generally. So yeah, it was a very stressful process. He also was, he had not done the tenancy in the unit that I was in, could be traced back through a number of people, probably pushing a dozen different people. And I don't think he'd done walkthroughs between people. So there were things that I'd never seen before in the basement. I never put anything in the basement.
He's getting very upset in the emails that there are things in the basement and like problems wrong with the unit. And there are tenants who you have shared the home with who have moved out who had leases and, didn't do walkthroughs with them to see if the damage was on them. And so you, as the last tenants in the home, as you move out, he's like, well, this is on you guys.
Well, it was also things that he had never fixed that were called out in the inspection.
Right.
So that was, the lack of just sort of how some of the things in the kitchen were not ever finished in a renovation, things like that, that were, he was charging us for replacements of. It was very, very bizarre. One of the things, which was pretty minor, but that appeared on the inspection thing, was just like the lack of electrical outlet covers in a lot of places in the apartment, including the kitchen. And I had myself gone and gotten some and installed them because he wasn't getting around to it, and I did some painting and stuff. And so it was really odd to see him.
The nickel and diming at the end. I saw the invoice that he sends you on this email chain with you and the people you lived with, and the way he's nickel and diming you for electrical plates, and you say like some of these outlets and switches didn't have covers to begin with, and you went out of your way, dug into your pockets for quarters and dimes and nickels to buy these very cheap items.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was in the email or in a different means where he was trying to say that they were like five or... the price he had for them was just like,
He had three columns in the invoice. Yeah. One is like cost of the item, then the install, then procurement. And then I don't know if it was you or someone else is like, Scott, you told me you have these things in your basement. Are you charging us a procurement cost?
That
to
was
go
me.
Down into your
it
basement.
Was, I had checked with him. You know, I'm somebody who, I know that it, when I'm renting, it is not my structure. And I know that well-intentioned people still do things that, like I try and check with people before I do things to a building. I want it to be able to serve the next renters for however long or what have you. So I checked with him when there was something that I wanted, a medicine cabinet that I asked to remove, and he verified it. He was there. He was working in the basement the day I took it down. I pointed it out to him again when during some of the moving out process, and then he was still trying to charge us for it. It was really bizarre.
There's something weird going on with Scott Graham, because it was like $90-something between the three of you. Clearly, he has run a shoddy landlording operation. This is a house that's been in disrepair the whole time you've lived there. And at the end, he's not like, well, you owe me $2,500 for all of these things. He's like, well, there's a missing tile here, and the plates on the electrical outlets are not up to my standards. And figure out what you owe me. It's $90 total. Just decide amongst yourselves what you are going to pay me. Very weird nickel and diming when you'd think he would be feeling bad about the foreclosure that happened and all the things that are in poor condition, the missing wall.
There didn't seem to be much empathy. That was one of the bizarre bits. There just wasn't. It was like he didn't see that landlording means that there are people whose well-being, whose stability of their home, their safety, their comfort depends on you. And
right.
And how you fulfill those responsibilities. And I've had, since then, thank goodness, I've had, you know, good landlords and who are responsive, who know that what happens in your unit under their watch can inconvenience you, who have, when something has gone wrong without me asking, offered to take money off of my rent for the inconvenience of a shower that didn't work for a couple of days or what have you. And just the detachment that Scott had consistently between this responsibility and the impacts that it had, between his responsibility and the structure that was his investment property. And it, you know, it seemed later like it was just that he just, given that he didn't even one person of the sort of the three units, one person in the three bedroom unit paid more in rent over the course of his ownership than he paid on the mortgage. Like, he wasn't using, I don't know.
The money wasn't going back into the house.
No, there wasn't. It seemed like he saw the building as a way for him to get money. Yeah. He didn't see it as a mutual relationship between tenants and landlord, with the building sort of at the center of it. It was really, really strange.
It doesn't even seem like he saw his home that he owned, that he was renting out, his business, as something... as an asset to be taken care of. Not even taking care of you. He wasn't taking care of this property in a way that would keep it a viable concern.
Yeah, my father was a civil engineer. I am somebody who, I have very place-based memories. I am attached to, you know, the buildings that I live in, and I felt like I cared a lot more about it than he did, and that was sad to me.
Also, when, so this move-out ordeal where he's nickel and diming you, there was a broken tile, and I think you described how, like, the tile broke because it was not, there was nothing behind it. Like, it wasn't really attached to anything. Maybe it was attached to things on the side, but, like,
yeah,
you could push on it, and it would kind of break because there's nothing behind it.
Yeah.
And he was trying to charge you for that.
He did. I mean, he did charge. He did charge us for that.
And it wasn't even a lot of money. That's what I don't get. Like, he's not trying to scam you necessarily.
It felt petty. It felt like sort of like there wasn't.
Literally nickel and diming you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
for things that are his fault.
Really bizarre.
And everyone seemed frustrated on the way out. All of your fellow tenants.
It was so stressful. There had been the instability, and I'm lucky that, you know, I think that the people that I had as roommates were all good people, and that made it easier. But there was friction that came up because of the disrepair, because of the neglect, and it was just so frustrating to not have the stability of a home that would be taken care of, where you knew you could, you know, I hosted Thanksgiving for family one year. It was my first year doing that, and to not know if it would be honestly safe for some of my older relatives to get up the stairs because of just the consistency of not finishing a project to the point of safety, of insulation, of sort of these basic things it was stressful.
So we're at the end, Julia. Anything we haven't covered? Any closing thoughts?
I'm not trying to malign anyone. I just have concerns that the Scott's strengths were not highlighted in his role as a landlord with that kind of responsibility over people's well-being, over our safety, our comfort, you know, our sense of home. And I lived in Ward 7 there because of how the bounds had changed at that time. I live in Ward 7. I care about Minneapolis. I'm just concerned that the patterns of the Scott's strengths are not within the realm that I are where.
You're being too kind. You use the phrase "his strengths were not highlighted" to wrap this up. His strengths were not highlighted. You have described some horrible conditions that you lived through. So it's very kind of you to say his strengths were not highlighted.
I am concerned that the role of city council member is outside of what is good for either the city of Minneapolis or honestly for Scott himself.
He's not a kind or compassionate person, at least in his role with power over you and
my
your housing.
My generous interpretation would be that there was something extremely stressful about having even, you know, six people whose homes he had some level of control and determination over. And under that pressure, he was kind of lashing out and not responding out of his best self.
Not good at his job as a landlord, and potentially not great in his job as a council member.
I'm concerned.
Okay. Julia Curran, my friend, thank you for telling me your story. This has been a weird episode for me to do, but I mean, it's good information. I hope people take it seriously.
I hope so too. I want what's best for Minneapolis.
Okay. Thank you. This has been the Wedge Live Podcast. I'm your host, John Edwards. Thank you for listening.
This is a real, real, real thing. Real, 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 real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this.
Today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now. 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 Right now.